Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you may be listening to us in the great wide world brought together by the internet. It's time for the last three guys to do a podcast. I'm John Morgo with Leon Brown. Daniel Bolton is not with us today. He is out in Las Vegas enjoying himself with his wife, a nice anniversary gift. I don't know if they are talking to my parents, but if they are, I hope they're having fun. And joining us as a co-host duties will be JJ Gurevich from ATL Prime Sports. JJ, I'm so glad you're able to come on and help us out for stepping in as a co-host. Thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. It's good to be back on and glad to be here. So thank you.
All right. Well, let's get down and dirty with the week that's been in here in the ATL. And, of course, it all starts with the Atlanta Falcons. They went hosted New Orleans on the back end of their two-game swing, and they tried to kick their way to a victory and probably still had a shot to win, but instead they lost again to the New Orleans Saints. And with this victory, the Saints clinched a playoff berth in the upcoming postseason. Final score, of course, 21-16. And I'm going to let Leon go first on this because, well, let me preface my remarks. When we were talking about this game last week, Daniel had the opinion that Raheem Morris had done enough to become the new Atlanta Falcons head coach. I said, no, I want to see what he would do in terms of this rematch. I want to see if he would make adjustments. And apparently, they really didn't make a lot of adjustments. Sure, I think Matt Ryan had a lot more time to operate, but this is still an offense that just cannot seem to get anything but field goals.
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems that Atlanta couldn't get out their own way this game. I mean, this right here was New Orleans' ninth straight victory over the team, which makes it roughly 4 years since Atlanta has beaten New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Falcons, you know, they had their chances throughout the game.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, the offensive line could not block for Todd Gurley when it was most needed. You know, that tackle towards the end of the game for that, what was like a 7-yard loss?
Yep.
When the game on the line, I mean, that right there kind of summed up the whole game for the Falcons. And for the defense to give up two touchdowns to a seemingly rookie quarterback in Taysom Hill, I mean, this man threw his first two touchdowns of his career against the Falcons defense.
Right.
That shouldn't have happened.
Point, Leon. Very good point. I second out everything you said. When the Saints rushed for 207, the Falcons struggled to get I think they rushed for right at 100 as a team. That doesn't equate to victories in the NFL. So you can't expect something and not have a run game and expect Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley to make every play down the stretch. I mean, despite how bad Atlanta played, turning the ball over once, they still had two shots in the last 2 minutes to win the game. So it just goes to show you how much offensive talent's on the Atlanta Falcons. Where they lack is the defense. They made Taysom Hill look like a legitimate quarterback, which he hasn't really looked like that the first two starts he had. The Atlanta Falcons kept him from throwing a touchdown pass the first time they played. They still got beat 24-9, but they still kept them from throwing the ball all over them. This week, he was able to throw the ball. They were able to run the ball. They did everything they wanted to, and they won 21-16. And neither team really played an efficient ball game except for, honestly, the Saints rushing game, which Taysom Hill had a huge part of. He had a 45-yard, something like that, yard rush early on, set him up for a touchdown early. And They built the momentum up to 21-9 lead. And again, I just hang the hat on it. You nailed it. They can't seem to beat the Saints. The last time they played them and beat them, Deion Jones went up and grabbed the ball in a last minute drive for Drew Brees, in which Matt Ryan threw three picks. I can't remember. I think that's been three or four years ago, as Leon mentioned. So this is nuts. What an interesting game to watch. and it pretty much eliminates the Atlanta Falcons from the playoffs.
Yeah, because I noticed on the CBS morning preview show when they did their NFC playoff wrap-up as to, you know, who's in there, I noticed they had Dallas and not Atlanta, even though Dallas has got, they have similar records, but that's only because Dallas, if, you know, if you get on a three-game winning streak, you're winning the NFC East. The thing of it is with the Falcons, though, I'm just concerned about their vanilla offense. Dirk Cotter just seems to have one play style, and that's keeping things basic and simple. I want to see him open things up, and he just doesn't seem to do so. Although they did get a touchdown with Matt Ryan finding Russell Gage toward the end, and that set up that last couple of plays toward the end, where, as you said, JJ and Leon, they did have a chance to win. I'm just concerned about just the state of this offense, how it just keeps driving, and then when it gets into the red zone or the yellow zone, as I call it, it just kind of gets stuck, and we have to settle for Byung-Hoo's for Koo's field goals.
Yeah, so we got a couple questions for the Atlanta for the Atlanta Falcons during the offseason. I mean, if you're Arthur Blank in management, are we looking to clean house?
Well,
we gotta go. We gotta go. What's been working? What has not been working?
It's tough to say. To me, I think the Falcons have tried to clean house. I think what they need to do is concentrate on a GM first.
Yes.
The head coach is out of there. Dan Quinn is gone. So let's face it, Raheem Morris has gotten this team playing much better. But is he the guy to go forward with and build a franchise around him with? Who knows? He had his chance in Tampa Bay. It was about a 500 guy off the top of my head, record-wise. He's got his head coaching experience. I think he deserves a shot at the job for sure. But, you know, there's a lot of good candidates out there to replace that. But first, I think you've got to find a GM that's going to be on page with Arthur Blank. And I think you need to draft the from the inside out, from the closest to the ball to the farthest away from the ball. And that's how Atlanta needs to draft from now on.
Well, that's
Dimitroff loved to draft skilled players early and move up like Julio Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But you need offensive and defensive linemen in this league. So that's GM first. And then we'll find a coach. But cleaning house, it's almost already been done.
And it looks like Atlanta will now – usually Atlanta gets a couple of victories in the after really just being cratered for the first half of the season. They get a couple of victories, and it's enough to move them into the middle of the pack in terms of draft status. So they go after – they get, as you said, the best available player is probably what they're doing. And honestly, Thomas Dimitroff has whiffed. Whenever he has gone for a lineman, he has – whiffed horribly on a lot of different choices. Tack McKinley ran himself out. Vic Beasley ran himself out. So, but now it looks like Atlanta is going to get either they'll probably, when all is said and done, they'll be drafting either in the low single digits or the low teens, anywhere from say 9 to 14, maybe 8 to 14, something a little better than what they're going to do. And again, the offensive components are still there. You got Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley is coming in. You probably do need to get a running back. Todd Gurley is not the long-term solution. And I'm still not sure what we have in Ito Smith. I think he could be the long-term, but they're really going to need a quality running back. And maybe you can get that. But the good thing about running backs is you can get them at the late stages of the draft. You don't need to really go out and get a running back unless you got someone of the caliber of Saquon Barkley, but I don't see anything of that in this year's draft class. You can get a serviceable running back in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, so you don't need that. It's just another situation where the Falcons are going into the draft needing a shutdown, either a road grader in the middle of the line or someone to come off the edges. on the defensive line to get sacks, because we just haven't had that in years, and it seems like it's constantly repeating itself in terms of what the Falcons need in their draft, and it's just another year of that. Going to your other point about the coach, they do have to get the GM first. Now, I know everyone here wants Eric Bieniemy to be our new head coach, and I got news for you. He's going to Houston. I don't see him going anywhere else. Deshaun Watson wants him in Houston. I think that's probably where he's going to wind up.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I second that.
Yeah, so we're going to have to...
For Houston, I don't think that Airbnb could resolve what's going on in Houston. Houston has a personnel issue. Well, when you lose a major piece of your offense like a DeAndre Hopkins to a bonehead coaching decision, it's going to take them a little time to move in the right direction. I mean, right now they have their quarterback, but they're going to need pieces around that man, or if they want that to happen. They just may lose J.J. Watt in the offseason.
I think J.J. Watt is going to move in the offseason, and if anything, if I'm Houston, I'm going to want to trade him before he does leave and make sure I get something for him, because you know J.J.'s got a lot left in the tank. And I think J.J. would be a good centerpiece for them to get a massive trade to try and bring in a wide receiver as well. Because now that Bill O'Brien is gone, he won't be making those idiotic moves that we saw during the offseason, like sending DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona. I mean, things that just scratch your head about, you know, why is he doing this? So that's one thing that's going in Houston's favor, that, you know, you got to get someone in there who at least knows what he's doing and I guess keeps his personal opinions out of things, just basically on football. But, but honestly, with the head coaching, once there's Eric Bieniemy is the hot name, I really don't know if there is another really name assistant who's just itching to get that head coach slot. I'm sure the Falcons are finding one. I'm sure they're conducting their preliminary interviews. They're doing as much as they can under the NFL guidelines. I'm sure they've got names in mind we're not going to know about until at least another month
a name to be reckoned with maybe in this offseason or in the next offseason is going to be the offensive coordinator for Carolina Panthers.
Yes, that was Brady. Exactly, yeah.
I think he's a hot name, but I think if we're going to chit-chat about head coaching vacancies and who could possibly fill in, if we're going to chit-chat on that for a second, I really think there's a situation in Ann Arbor brewing that it might wake Atlanta ears up and say, hey, maybe we get Jim Harbaugh a call. That might be an option at the end of the season with the way Michigan's going.
Well, the thing of it is, though, that might be, because I don't know when we play Cleveland and Cincinnati. Because as we all know, Jim Harbaugh has problems with teams from Ohio. So, you know, you want to make sure you get them, you get him knowing that you don't have to play either Cleveland or Cincinnati for a couple seasons. So I just want to make sure of that. But yeah, I think it does look like the Jim Harbaugh experiment in Michigan is on its way out. And he might want to jump back into the NFL. So that is definitely a name. And you mentioned the offensive coordinator for Carolina. That's another name that I've heard being bandied about in this offseason. All right, J.J. Gurevich joining us here as co-host as Daniel Bolton is enjoying himself in Las Vegas. We're here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. We're talking NFL. We just talked about the Falcons-Saints game, but, of course, a lot of other stuff going on. The big game that's going on right now, Green Bay beating Philadelphia 14-3. That's about 10 minutes left. I'm not even mentioning Leon's Chargers. Because right now, in New England is really kind of punching them 28-0. That's ugh.
That's going. I'm trying to figure out what's that. And I'm not saying this because I'm assuming this point you have a title friend this year, because I am.
Well,
maybe it's coming straight from the heart on this one. But and I might be wrong. I don't know. But for Justin Herbert, you know, though he has a lot of promise, to be in the running for Rookie of the Year with only two wins on his resume as a rookie.
But he's consistently throwing for 300 yards a game. I mean, the guy is he's consistent. He's doing well. And we made this point last week where I called the Chargers the best of the worst. And that's, you know, that's kind of where they are. But yeah, Justin Herbert has definitely performed well with the Chargers, though. It just looks like, you know, why are they losing games? And right now they're down 28. As I said, they're down 28-0. So you got to really lay it on the defensive side.
Right. It's just, I see the stats. The stats are fairly pretty. To a certain degree, you know, Philip Rivers has great stats.
Uh-huh.
He does. It's sometimes stats don't, you know, all those numbers.
Well,
at the end of the day, as a fan, I guess, I'm worried about the alphabet, the letters.
Yeah, the W's and the L's. And, you know, so you gotta figure out where is the breakdown coming from? Where can you do better? Is there anyone, one person, one element of the game that right now is the problem? And, you know, New England is looking at this game. The Patriots scored 21 points in the second quarter. Cam Newton, though, and they're really doing it on a running game. Although Cam does have two rushing touchdowns. So he's another one of those examples of trying to get the team on his back. And looking at all these other ones, I think Chargers had a blocked field goal. And I want to say, let's see what we got here. There was one other touchdown. Trying to find it. Oh, wait a minute. Let's try this. Is that the right button? I don't know if that's the right button.
While you're looking that up, I'll make a couple comments about the Los Angeles Chargers. And they've been in so many one-possession games.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
You look at week two. They lose by 3 points to the Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champions. Week three, they lose by 5. Week four, they lose on the road to Tom Brady and the Buccaneers by 7. At the Saints, they lose by 3 points. So there's 4 losses in a row could be flip-flopped by a couple plays.
Uh-huh.
It's definitely this close of a margin. Justin Herbert has looked great, as you both have mentioned. He threw a pick tonight just a couple moments ago, so it's not looking good in a 28-0 route right now. But he has been the bright spot for Los Angeles this season, and it's been really fun to watch. And if they can get those one-score games turned around, this is a close to a playoff team here, fellas.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, looking at the scoring, New England blocked a field goal and they brought it back for a touchdown, and they ran a punt back for a touchdown. So you got two special teams. Failures has resulted in 14 points, and that's the difference between a route and a close game. 14-0,
correct.
Yeah, you can handle that. So it's the little things, as JJ is kind of alluding to. I mean, because they're hanging, as JJ mentioned, they're hanging around. And if you got a quarterback who can routinely throw for 300 yard games, he can keep you in there. But you just gotta work on the little things. And unfortunately, losing kind of builds on losing. Once one thing goes wrong, you're sitting there like, okay, here it comes. Here it comes. Here everything is coming on. You know, it's all falling apart right now. And I think that's kind of where the Chargers are at. Their mindset's got to change. You know, once something wrong happens, they got to forget about it and not expect everything else. And then, because once you do that, things just kind of snowball at you.
Absolutely.
It's just to think that 2 years ago, this team was on course to compete for a Super Bowl, and how within just that short amount of time, the culture has changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's
same in Atlanta, Leon. It's very similar. That's how the NFL and how close the parity is. Each and every year, you could take the last place team, such as the Chargers, the Jets right now, and you interchange 4 or 5 parts. they may have a great ball club in 2 years, just like that. Look, the Falcons were in the Super Bowl just 3.5 short seasons ago.
Right.
Here we are now, they're 4-8 struggling. So you're right there on the brink of things. You're exactly correct. That's the break of it. There's some crazy things going on in the NFL right now.
Oh, insane stuff. And you talk about the Jets, and we'll talk about the Dolphins in a second. But you look at the Jets, and they had the Raiders beat in that game. And what happens? Suggs catches a 41-yard touchdown pass as time winds down, and the Raiders escape with a 31-28 win. And of course, you got the Jets fans privately cheering because they want to go 0-16. You know, they want Trevor Lawrence to come. And Trevor, I got news for the Jets. Trevor Lawrence is not the answer to their problems. They're not going to get Trevor Lawrence and win week one next season immediately. That's just not going to happen. They've got so many holes in that franchise. Can Trevor Lawrence play cornerback? Can he block? No,
can he do it all?
Yeah, which is what you're expecting him to do. He can't. He can lead the offense, but again, if he doesn't have those players, he's not going to have Travis Etienne that he can hand off to. You know, the Jets just need so much right now, and I don't even know if Adam Gase is the right person to try and bring them back.
I don't think he'll be there at the end of the year. That's another story to look out for. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you another quick one. We could have, staying on the Jets and piggybacking off of this topic, we could have an 0-16 and a 16-0 in the same season.
Yeah. Pittsburgh, yeah.
How crazy is that? If the Steelers, and I honestly, let's look at the Steelers' rest of the schedule. They're playing the Washington football team. I didn't want to call them the Redskins.
Right.
Normally the Redskins.
Right.
Then they play at Buffalo. That's a winnable game.
Yep.
At Cincinnati's a winnable game.
Mm-hmm.
They play at the Browns, which is going to be tough to end the season. And, of course, they play the Colts there. So a couple winnable games, three in a row, followed by two tough games in the season. It very well could go 16-0, and we could have an 0-16 in the Jets.
What?
That's how crazy 2020 is.
I think the Steelers benefited from a second-place schedule. Because remember, Baltimore got the first place schedule, so the Steelers are missing. They're missing the Chiefs. They don't play Kansas City. That would have been a tough game for them. And also, the Steelers, they also got the NFC least in the rotation.
Correct.
So the Steelers really got lucky in terms of the role of the schedule, and I think the schedule plays a lot into that 16-0. If they drew the NFC West, I don't think they would have at least lost one of those games.
I agree.
So you know, so Pittsburgh, as much, yes, they probably will go 16-0, and it doesn't deserve an asterisk, but it kind of does simply because they got really, really lucky. And
if they win the Super Bowl, there won't be an asterisk on it.
Exactly. But the 16-0, I would almost put just like a little tiny one, a very little tiny one, in terms of who they got. And you know, I won't say a Twitter argument because that's not really what I want to go to, but. Todd Corder, your co-host on the ATL Prime Sports, we kind of got into it a little tiny bit because I said the Browns were going to be a playoff team, and
I agree with you.
I wasn't sure if he thought that I meant they were going to win the AFC North. But I said no, I didn't mean that. I mean I looked at their schedule. I thought they were going to be 10-6, honestly. Although the one game I thought they were going to lose, they won. I honestly thought Tennessee was going to beat them, but they give the Brownies credit. They beat Tennessee, and you figure you look at the rest of their schedule. They're going 11-5 because they play two games against. Their next two games are against the New York squads. You know, they get the Giants and Jets. So there's your 11 wins right there, and then they wind up with Baltimore and Pittsburgh. So I mean, the Brownies are in the playoffs right now. I don't see any way that.
I agree with you. I called it. I said it to Todd on our ATL Prime Sports podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I said it to Todd. They're a playoff team. Unbelievable story. I tell you, folks, real quick, I want to get in and talk about the Minnesota Vikings real quick.
Okay.
What a story. We should all be talking about the Vikings. 1-5, now 6-6. They can possibly get in the playoffs after starting 1-5. again, 2020.
Exactly. And the Vikings, you know, they had overtime with Jacksonville. You know, it looked like they were up on that. They were up for most of that game, weren't they? And then Jacksonville had a nice comeback to tie it up. And then, you know, you're just not going to beat them at home with that. But yeah, Minnesota's 5-6. I think with Minnesota, the problem now there's just a dogfight for second place in the NFC North. I mean, the Bears had that great start, but that was a matter of the Bears' schedule. And now the Bears are coming back to earth. They're 5-7, 5-6. But Detroit, after that embarrassment a couple weeks ago against Houston, which led them to pretty much fire Matt Patricia, they actually come off the mat and defeat the Chicago Bears 34-30. So we've got a three-team logjam for second place in the NFC North. And the question is will one of those teams come off of that to claim that second, that potential wild card berth? It doesn't look good for those three teams. You figure Tampa Bay will probably be able to limp home, take one. And then you got the Rams in the NFC West. And then, there's that third team, that third slot.
The Cardinals are probably going to be right there, too.
Exactly. You know, that third slot's going to be a free-for-all. Arizona, San Francisco. So, you know, it might not be enough for Minnesota to come back and claim that spot, but it would be a great story. And now that the Bears, after that great start, you know, they've just fallen totally apart, and you kind of wonder what the aftermath is going to be in Chicago. I think Mitch Trubisky is going to be on his way out.
And you know what's crazy, John, is Trubisky actually played pretty good today. The Bears scored 30 points for the first time since like week 3, 4, 5. So somewhere in there, it's been a while. I'm going to go back and look at the schedule to confirm, but they haven't scored 30 points since, I'm looking at it right now. Boy, let's go back to week 3 against the Atlanta Falcons.
Right. Another game that the Bears got lucky to win. But another thing with the Lions, Matthew Stafford, who's, again, given up for dead after that Houston game, he comes back to throw for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So, again, as you said, JJ, 2020, you just don't know what's going to happen. And
if you're the Lions and you missed the playoffs again this year,
well, you've already fired your coach. I mean, you know, that's pretty much, you've already done that.
Okay. So they give Matthew Stafford another year?
If he keeps doing what he did today, it's going to be very difficult for them to say no to it.
Because I believe the Lions have only made the playoffs in the last 6 years. Once?
Well, I mean, yeah, they sniff.
Stafford's taken him to the playoffs 3 times with very subpar talent, besides Calvin Johnson and the occasional decent season. Stafford hasn't had a 1,000-yard rusher in his whole entire career.
Mm-hmm.
So that is tough to get to the playoffs with when you're doing everything on your back. You look at Stafford, the guy's throwing for a career 274 touchdown passes, throwing for over 43,000 yards. The guy's got this tangibles. He can throw the ball. He can win you games. Heck, he's in the top 5 in comeback wins in the NFL since he's been in the league. So I think Stafford will be a Lion the rest of his career. It's just a matter of if a GM wants to build around him. He wants to be a Lion. Will the new coach let him? Who knows? That's the real question. I think it'd be smart for the Lions to stick with him. I don't think there's much better out there than Matthew Stafford. He's a pretty good player.
Yeah, and you're not. Yeah. And again, the Lions are going to be in that middle of the draft, and you know, the draft basically this year is Trevor Lawrence, and whoever goes second is going to take Justin Fields, and then who knows what. That's pretty much where things are right now with that.
Because if I'm the Lions, I'm laying all possible options, because even when Matthew Stafford had Calvin Johnson, they weren't, you know, even though they did lack the run again. Like I said, they haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher in, you know, in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
So their offense lacked that balance. I see the same thing in New England. Let's see, the Patriots will be 6-6 after this game.
Right.
They have a heck of a schedule going forward. And them making it to the playoffs is quite a stretch. But if you're the Patriots, which direction do you go in? I mean, because they have – that team is pretty much – they have nothing. But they have a quarterback.
Yeah.
But Julian Edelman – he's not playing this game. I believe Julian Edelman will be back, what, next game? That's their best wide receiver.
Right.
So, like, do the Patriots, you know, do they need to go to the draft and start drafting people? It's like, my goodness. I mean, are you trying to get better? I mean, are the Patriots trying to get better at this point? I mean, you know, they have the potential.
Well, the Patriots are going to basically stick around Los Angeles for the next few days because they play the Rams on Thursday night. That's the Thursday night game this week. So they're going to stay there. And honestly, since they share the same stadium, they're probably going to leave their stuff in the locker room.
Right.
You know, because they probably will take it, but still, they can do that if they want. They want to leave stuff.
Well, absolutely. They're staying in the same stadium, the same facility.
Yeah,
so
they can just hang out.
I would hang out. They're probably staying at the same hotel. It would probably be very normal for them.
Yeah. So there's not. So right. This is, and got to give the NFL schedule maker props for doing that, for letting them do that. You can. Better believe that Bill Belichick made that request, and it just made a lot of sense. Last three guys to do a podcast. I'm John Morgo with Leon Brown. Again, JJ Jurevich is joining us for the ATL Prime Sports podcast as Daniel Bolton is enjoying himself in Las Vegas. He'll be back with us on the cast next week here, and we're here on Facebook Live. And again, this episode will drop Tuesday night on iTunes, Spotify, as well as SoundCloud, BreakerCast, and a host of other platforms. You can catch us that on as well. Again, live on Sunday nights here on Facebook and the rebroadcast over on Tuesday. We've been talking NFL, a lot of stuff going on. We think the Steelers are going to go 16-0. The thing with the Saints, though, I want to get back to the Saints because this is interesting. Taysom Hill, they've won 9 straight. The last couple with Taysom Hill as quarterback, as Drew Brees is out. And I don't think Drew, JJ, I'm of the opinion that I don't think Drew is coming back this season. Because he has got like a bunch of cracked ribs. He had a deflated lung. I don't think he's coming back. I'm just not sure how long. I mean, so far the Saints are doing great with Taysom Hill as quarterback. I'm just wondering if they can keep this up when they head into December and especially January. I don't know. I don't think they can.
I don't think they can either. I'm going to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
Because at the end of the day, they barely made it out of Atlanta today.
Yes.
They barely made it. Atlanta, they were a batted pass away from getting upset.
Mm-hmm.
Today.
Right.
And if I'm the coaching staff, I'm concerned because it's not just about the loss. It's the tape that's out there.
Right.
That the next teams are going to be studying. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I'm
with you guys. I don't know if they can keep it up, but I tell you, Taysom Hill's been effective enough to keep it going. Their defense has played outstanding the last 3 weeks. They held two teams they almost did it to Atlanta again. Atlanta didn't score till the fourth quarter. They almost
right.
held three teams in a row. Of course, three weeks in a row, two teams. They played the Falcons 2 weeks ago and did it. Played Denver last week and did it. Held them two without a touchdown. That's 8, 10, 11 consecutive quarters they held a team without a touchdown. If your defense can do that, it doesn't matter what Taysom Hill does. As long as he doesn't turn the ball over. Now, what I did notice Taysom Hill has had the ball stripped out of his hands a couple times while running. Mm-hmm. If he can shore up the football, he can. He hasn't thrown many interceptions. In fact, I don't know if he has thrown one yet since he's been back. Threw two touchdown passes today. If their defense holds up, all Taysom Hill has to do is maintain, and the Saints are good enough to just fall in line.
Well, with the Saints, they've got. Well, I think right now, what the Saints want to do is try to give themselves enough of a cushion so that even if Taysom Hill does regress or the defense has an off day, they still have enough of that cushion to still get that number one seed. Because that number one seed very big this year, as opposed to last year when there were two byes. Now there's only one for that number one seed, and the Saints. They get Minnesota in 3 weeks, but in 2 weeks they get Kansas City. So they got that, and then Carolina and Philly are their other games. And so you look at that slate, and I'm at the very worst case scenario. Of course, best case scenario 4-4. Worst case 2-2. I think if they go 2-2, it should be enough for them to hang on to that number one seed and get that bye, which is very important because the defense could use that week's rest. The question is it enough to get in the Super Bowl?
No, it won't be. I wouldn't bet on them. But you know who looks very quite. Yeah, they're going 11-5. I think you hit on the nail. Mm-hmm. And it's not a far cry. They'll lose two games, but then they'll win the last two. I see that coming. When I'm looking at a team that I'm looking at right now is the Miami Dolphins.
Okay.
Which though Tua Tagovailoa, if I did, I hope I pronounced the last name right.
There's a tongue. You gotta get that first syllable is tongue. Tungaloa. And then afterwards, I have no idea. Tagovailoa, Frank Viola.
Okay, I just don't want to call a grown man, and especially a football player, and especially a quarterback, PP.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to do that.
But I don't want him to Jim Rome and
Yeah.
Remember that story. But so you got two of them. In Miami, they're right now they're standing 8-5. I mean they're 8-4
mm-hmm.
as of right now. Now they have the Chiefs, the Patriots, the Raiders, and the Bills, their last four games.
Right.
Despite them being 8-4 right now, do you believe they'll finish 8-8?
I think they'll finish 10-6.
Okay. 10-6. So you're saying that they'll get wins against the Patriots and the Raiders?
Yes.
All right. Which, that'd be a playoff berth.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the Miami Dolphins might have the hardest schedule remaining in the NFL. They got the Chiefs, Patriots, right. Raiders, and Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They just like you said, Leon, they very well could lose every single one of those.
Yeah, they could.
To me, it's very tough to predict this Miami Dolphins football team. Tua did not play very well. He hasn't played well 2 weeks in a row. They had to sit him and bring in Fitzmagic to come in and finish the job the other week.
They said he had a thumb injury.
Thumb injury, correct, but still it looks like it's still bothering him. What are you going to do there? If it's a thumb injury, you got to play the better quarterback. Fitzmagic gives you a better chance to win if he's hurt. But if he's 100% healthy, you like the way Tua played the first two or three starts he had in the league. He looked lights out. So I can't give him a win versus the Chiefs.
No, I'm not either.
The Chiefs are on the road. They host the Patriots. I feel like they could get that one.
Mm-hmm.
On the road in Las Vegas and on the road to end the year in the cold in Buffalo, yeah. I don't think they get that one. I think they go 1-3, and I think they miss the playoffs.
Okay. Well, you figure that, like I said, you figure the Browns are going to get one. The Ravens probably will get one in terms of wild card berths. And then, again, it's just going to be a free-for-all. like the NFC. It's just going to be a free-for-all for that final berth. And we're going back and going back to the NFC. I made this another comment I made last week is that I think that Washington will get the berth in the NFC East.
I agree with that. Yeah. Washington, right now, you know, the New York Giants are having something to say about something.
Yep.
Again, it's 2020, but they're beating Seattle on the road right now.
Yeah, that's amazing.
14-5 still. They're playing baseball over there in, this, in the Northwest.
Oh, now it's 17-5.
They just kicked a field goal. Okay. So
17-5, yeah.
They with that win, it would be a very big deal because obviously we expect Washington to fall tomorrow afternoon on Monday Eve football.
Right. Yeah, not quite Monday. Well, it will. Let's put this. It's in Pittsburgh. It will be night by the time that game starts. It will be night.
But we'll see. So I mean, maybe the Giants. But I'm with you, John. I think Washington has a little bit more in the tank, especially if Daniel Jones is hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But a win in the NFC least, as we're calling it, is significant. And if they get one on the road in Seattle, that's going to hold a lot of water for that NFC East title.
Right. Right. I just my thing with the Giants, and they're basically before their win last week against Cincinnati, they had not gotten a win outside of their division. They've played a lot of NFC East games. They only have one left, Week 17 against Dallas. They were 3-2 in their division, and they just didn't show that they could beat somebody outside of the division. Now they're 2-0. Maybe. I mean, there's still 10 minutes left, and it's only a two possession game. Seattle, still time for Russell Wilson to be able to do something. I'm looking at Washington's last four games. At San Francisco, home with Seattle, then Carolina and Philly. And again, the Giants still have Cleveland to play, and they end up with Dallas. And Dallas always plays them well. I'm still on that. I'm still haven't gotten off the Redskins, the team formerly known as the Redskins, will be the one.
Gotcha.
Yeah, will be the one left standing when this is all over.
So if you're Seattle, do you count this? Do you chop this? I think they're gonna lose this game.
Okay.
Do you chop this up as any given Sunday? Like it could happen.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, because I see Seattle finishing. See, they have after this game, they have the Jets. That's a W.
Yeah.
They have the artist formerly known. They have the artist presently known as Washington.
Yep.
That's a win. So mm-hmm. That's 10-4.
Right.
They have the Rams. I believe they could possibly get that game too. That's 11-4. They could very well finish 12-4 this season. They could very well win out.
Mm-hmm.
And say that, but they don't win out. At least they'll finish 11-5.
Right.
You know. So I look at today as being an aberration. I mean, it happens. Good for the Giants, who, oh, man, if the Giants win the NFC East.
The Giants could be the only team in the world to have a top 10 draft pick and have a home game in the playoffs and not have the top 10 via a trade.
But if the Giants, I'll be very happy for the Giants.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, they face enormous adversity.
Yep, Saquon Barkley going down, breaking in, giving the reins to Daniel Jones.
Right. We're talking about minus Odell Beckham.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they face a lot of adversity, but the story of the NFC East, in my opinion, will be Mike McCartney.
Okay.
Because granted, you lost your quarterback. But you have the luxury of going with another starting quarterback. Well, this is starting last season.
Yeah, Andy Dalton.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And for, you know, so seemingly you have an intact, your team is intact. But it was, for the most part, that's the best possible scenario that you can have. If your main quarterback goes down, to have another quarterback that was a starter match. We see this to a certain degree. We thought this was going to be the case in New Orleans, but New Orleans had other plans.
Right. The only thing for Dallas, again, and all four teams in the NFC East are still alive, technically. I don't think either one of us is giving Philadelphia a shot simply because Carson Wentz is basically suffering from PTSD right now. He's playing like a quarterback scared. And Dallas, I think with Dallas, we just want Dallas to go away. I don't think anyone is actually rooting for Dallas right now. And that might actually give them a little bit of an underdog advantage that, you know, Mike McCarthy's saying to his squad, look, no one wants us to win these things. And you look at their next, I mean, after Baltimore on Tuesday night, I mean, look at, they really have just one really tough game. They got Cincinnati, San Francisco, Philly, and New York, the Giants. So, I mean, as much as I would love to, we really can't write off Dallas.
Can't write off anybody in the NFC East.
Well, I'm writing off Philadelphia because they're getting beat up by Green Bay, and they need an offensive line desperately. Carson Wentz, as I said, he's hearing footsteps in his head. He's making horrible decisions. He's getting rid of the ball way too fast. He's trying to do everything himself, and that's just leading him down some very bad roads. So I don't see Philadelphia doing much in these last four games. Well, we're going to have to leave the NFL there because we still got some time left and we do have other topics that I want to hit. And number one is the NBA. Again, it's a very compressed NBA offseason, but Leon, we were talking a little bit about this during before we went on air, and you told me that you were going to hold your analysis until we got on air, but the trade between the trade that swapped John Wall and Westbrook, you know, they switch sides. Westbrook goes to Washington, and I want your analysis because you really had a really good one.
Yeah, you know that's pretty much the high profile trade of the year. Russell Westbrook for John Wall.
Right.
We think we hear that the fans cheering, pom-poms are raising. That's a trade that neither team gotten better on. Neither team will make any I'm just being honest here. Neither team will make any it will not make Houston any better in the West. I'm sorry. The move that Houston made in the offseason that could possibly push the needle forward would be the acquisition of DeMarcus Cousins. If DeMarcus Cousins can be, if he, you know, coming off an ACL injury and being north of 280 pounds, can he keep them at least in fourth place in the West? And I don't think so. If he could come back the same type of player that he was, yes. But if not, that's a problem. And then with John Wall coming off I believe he had an ACL, then he had a torn Achilles. And
right.
As we know, John Wall, his hallmark was his speed and athleticism. Him and Russell Westbrook being the fastest guys with basketball in hand and with a torn, with a recovered ACL, there's going to be a drop-off in his game. You know, he's not really known for being a great shooter. So and him and James Harden, who are both two ball-dominant point guards, playing in the same offense, is pretty much, you know, if I'm in Houston, and they're not getting rid of James Harden. I know James Harden wanted to leave. You know, he had this one big fantasy of them being another big three in Brooklyn.
Right.
But Houston is like, nah, we gave you a Supermax contract. And granted, you know, you didn't want to take the $50 million. So, you know, you don't have to take the $50 million. Oh, well. But you're not going anywhere. And if you do, Brooklyn, we're going to want Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant.
Right.
We don't care about the player division. In the words of Houston, we'll prepare to be uncomfortable.
Okay.
And right now with James Harden, who is a top five player in the league right now, and I'm saying this, he is right behind Giannis. So we're looking at LeBron James. We're looking at Kevin Durant, if he can come back to perform up to expected. Looking at Anthony Davis, number three. Look at Giannis number four, and I'm looking at James Harden number five, and everybody else after him, let possibly Daniel. Bro, you know he's a top five, top four player in the league. That Houston is just not going to let him go. It's not going to happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm looking at Houston, and I'm looking at them, they'll probably be a six. I believe that the team that will overtake Houston for the fourth seed will be Phoenix. I believe with the acquisition of Chris Paul, they're that much better.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the Washington book, as far as I went right back to 1999.
Right.
When looking at the Washington Wizards and their acquisition of Russell Westbrook, they'll be a playoff team. They'll definitely be a playoff team. They'll be exciting. Could they, you know, I kind of like that combo better because you have Russell Westbrook, who, despite, you know, his personality, as you know, him going just one speed, that's 100 miles an hour in one direction, he will get the rest of the offense involved. Bradley Beal will get his numbers. Remember when Paul George played with Russell Westbrook, he was the MVP candidate.
Right.
Because Russell Westbrook made sure he got his touches.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking for Russell Westbrook. Potentially, he can be Mr. Triple Double next year.
Right.
If he potentially go back to be Mr. Triple Double, the question is this: will Russell Westbrook win a playoff series? Where I know he won a playoff series last year, but he had James Harden.
Yes.
He wasn't the alpha in the offense. Now he will be the alpha back in the offense again. Can he win a playoff series while being the alpha dog in the offense? And that's why I'm waiting to see Russell Westbrook.
I like the trade. I personally think it's a win-win for both programs. The Rockets get a future first round draft pick out of it.
Yep.
Sure, John Wall may not be the same player he once was, but we saw what Russell Westbrook and James Harden did in Houston, and it wasn't that much. It wasn't enough to win the West. It wasn't enough to get by. So it ran D'Antonio out. So maybe this is a better suit for the new coach, Steven Silas, and his offense. He was an assistant under Rick Carlisle there in Dallas, who had one of the best offensive seasons in NBA history last year, despite the bubble and the pandemic. They still played ball with Luka Doncic and company down there. So this is a new resume in Houston. I think it'll work well in both programs. Again, I like that future first-round draft pick. Now, let's go to the Washington side of this thing. They get an MVP candidate to play with Bradley Beal, Bertans, Hachimura, and Thomas Bryant. It's a pretty solid starting five now. You've got a point guard that can average you a triple-double, go and win you a ball game. He did it in Oklahoma City when he lost Harden the first time. And in Kevin Durant, too. He just put the team on his shoulders. You didn't think they would win. And what did they do? They still went to the playoffs. I like Westbrook in Washington. I think he'll step up. He's playing in an easier conference. He'll be in the Eastern Conference. There's no LeBron James in the Eastern Conference. This is a huge trade. I think the Wizards hit it big here. I really, really like the trade. They reunite with Scott Brooks, his old coach in Oklahoma City. I think they can rekindle some love, and maybe they can make a run here. But I think you're right, Leon. They're still probably middle of the pack, 4 or 5 seed at best. Because the Hawks turned things around in the East. Houston, I think, won this trade, in my opinion. I'm a future first-round draft pick guy all day. Yeah. So if you're and who knows, you mentioned they may make more moves. There's rumor that James Harden is on the move to the Nets. Who knows what they'll get in return? Maybe they're rebuilding there, and Silas wants young talent, doesn't want Harden. Who knows what's going to happen? It is a shortened offseason due to 2020 and the COVID outbreak. I'm excited to see what happens. Personally, I think this was a split 50-50, but the future first-round draft pick makes it 50.1% to 49.9%. I mean, it's that close of a trade to me.
Yeah, I'm personally surprised that James Harden is still in Houston. I'm not sure how he and John Wall are going to coexist right now. Again, Harden made it plainly clear, I think, that he wants out, that he wants to go to Brooklyn, which would again really capsize the Eastern Conference, maybe give Brooklyn that extra push. But right now, because of the shortened offseason, because guys, we have exhibition games this week. I think the exhibition season starts the 11th. So we got exhibition in the NBA this week. And, of course, COVID is still a factor. Whether or not we actually get a regular season and get it non-bubbled is still a very big question. So a lot can still happen in terms of the NBA. I like the way – I wish they would start on Christmas Day. They're starting a couple days beforehand. But other than that, there's still a lot to say in what is going to be a very, very interesting 2020 to 21 season in the NBA. Of course, LA is the team to beat. I believe didn't the Lakers just re-up Anthony Davis? Didn't I just see
they
that?
Did.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Yep. So good for them. We've only got about a couple minutes left. A couple other topics I want to hit quickly. I believe everyone saw the Alabama LSU game last night. Can anybody stop Alabama?
No. Simple answer, no. Not this season. I think they're a matchup nightmare for any defensive coordinator. Wide receiver Devontae Smith, 1,305 yards, 15 TDs on 80 receptions. He's shattered the SEC TD reception record, which was previously held by Chris Doran and Amari Cooper at 31. He's at 38. They still got games to play.
Yep.
Haven't even mentioned Mac Jones, Najee Harris yet. If they had Waddle as well, this would be even more of a juggernaut. This is literally one of the best Alabama teams Nick Saban has had. He's admitted it. I don't think anybody stops it, especially on the offensive line. They get pushed. Najee Harris can run it for 200. Mac Jones can throw it for 300. That's basically what they've been doing the entire season. Steve Sarkisian can do whatever he wants with the playbook because it's mismatches throughout the game. They even have great tight ends. And here's the deal. This is why I don't think anybody can stop them. Ohio State's got question marks on the defensive side of the football. They're 96th in points against them this year, giving up over 23.5. They had to shoot out and beat Indiana. They were up by like 28 points in that game and had to hold on to win. There's my question mark with them. Notre Dame played Clemson without Trevor Lawrence. So I really want to see what Notre Dame looks like when they have Trevor Lawrence behind the center. And I don't see Florida beating Bama in the SEC title game. And I think that honestly might be the team with the best shot.
Right.
I don't think anybody can beat Bama, folks.
No, it doesn't. I mean, Clemson, based on their performance, Clemson's having a lot of problems on third down. And I think maybe what happened last year where maybe Nick Saban just had that slight drop off of talent. Just very, very slight, and that was enough for Clemson because you had Lawrence and Etienne and all those factors just really playing at the top of their game to come in. But this is the season that Nick Saban gets his revenge on Clemson. And when we started this college football season, I made the joke we should just call off the college football season because we all know that come January, it's going to be Clemson, Alabama. We just know that. So let's just call everything off and just play Clemson and Alabama for the marbles in January. And sure enough, that's what's going to happen. You talk about Ohio State, they're having their COVID issues, and they are trying desperately to field a team and get those six games that they need to be eligible for the college football playoffs. And that is – I think they're, five now? They need one more?
Yeah, and Michigan, the team they're supposed to play next week, has had their outbreak, and they haven't played in a couple weeks. So it's six games is a big-time question mark for Ohio State.
Yeah, it's almost as if, and we've got some really great stories for this college football season. It has forced some, it has forced people to tap dance, and we've got some really interesting things out of it, like the BYU Coastal Carolina series. That's an ESPN 30 for 30 just waiting to happen in terms of what they had to do to put that game together in such a short amount of time. And a good victory for the Chanticleers, who could actually crash the get that at-large berth in those big bowl games. They could actually do that. So good job for Coastal Carolina.
I hope Cincinnati drops one, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think Cincinnati will be there.
Okay. And, of course, I want to give another shout-out. Again, I went to Vanderbilt, so that's why this podcast does have kind of a Vanderbilt-centric thing to it. But, boy, for Vanderbilt, 2020 has kind of been compressed into a period of about 2 weeks. Yes, they did have the feel-good story of Sarah Fuller becoming the first woman ever to participate in a P5 college football game. But then they've had massive COVID either people opting out, and of course there could be other explanations for that. Joe Fisher, the play-by-play voice for Vanderbilt, had to resign on Wednesday, and we wish him the best. He had to go into rehab, so we wish him the best. And of course, the whole situation not coming to play Georgia, Greg McGarrity made it sound like he was blaming Vanderbilt for that whole situation, kind of saying, "Oh, they're ducking, they're trying to duck us." And still, Georgia had, they're trying to put a thing to it. And of course, Derek Mason, their head coach, Vanderbilt's head coach, fired at the outset of that Missouri game. So, a lot of different issues being come in. I just wanted to, again, really kind of touch on that. There's just a lot of stuff going down on West End. And as an alum, I'm kind of looking at this like, wow, when does baseball season start? And can we get a good baseball season? That's another thing.
John, I'm right there with you, man. I don't see how they compete in every other sport and not football. Mm-hmm. They just won a women's SEC title.
In soccer.
They won a baseball national championship.
Twice.
They won twice. Dansby Swanson was a part of that team.
Yes, he was.
It's just unbelievable to me. You mentioned head coach Derek Mason getting fired. I don't know about that. We can go deeper into that if we had more time.
Yeah, maybe
players
next week.
Opting out, COVID-19, a female kicker, all of this on top of a winless football season. Look, things don't look good in Music City, John. I'm sure you know that. But
yep.
I thought Derek Mason was doing his best he could. Look, hell, he had 10 players opt out before this week alone.
Right.
I mean, he had 8 players transfer since spring practice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what cards can be dealt and get a full house and beat somebody with 4 of a kind over there.
And also,
that's what you're playing against every time. I mean, I didn't realize they were that shorthanded, John. That is unbelievable.
Yeah, they had one game. The Missouri game was originally postponed because they didn't have enough. And remember, Vanderbilt usually gets 4 non-conference games, and there's usually one that they get that they can win. Either they play Murray State, Western Kentucky. They'll get that win that way. But this season is just nuts. And we're supposed to go to play UNLV in Las Vegas in a couple of seasons. So I hope that game is still on. It's just a crazy situation. Of course, basketball as well. Although you look at men's basketball, Vanderbilt's had 2 lottery players in the last 3 seasons. And yet, this is still a team that can't win an SEC game to save its life. Darius Garland, Simi Chatu, and of course, who've actually played pretty well. And now Aaron Naismith, I think, is probably the next one up from that. So it's just a crazy situation over there. But I wanted to mention it because it just seems like 2020 has been compressed into about 2 weeks. I think the next thing is it's going to start raining frogs on West End. I think that's what's going to happen next over there. But yeah,
it's crazy, John. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think anybody's been dealt that bad of cards in this 2020 outbreak season. I really don't. That's why I really thought that was a I thought Derek Mason's a pretty good coach. And since you're a Vanderbilt guy, what are your opinions on that real quick?
Well, I think he lost control. I think he lost the team. That's another thing.
Okay.
He really lost the team. I think a lot. If you are getting called out, as what happened in halftime of that Missouri game, by your kicker, who is a women's soccer female player, if she's the one calling you out, then there needs to be a wholesale culture change. I think the team has just completely checked out. Now, of course, there are some things that are good there. You know, Ken Seals, their freshman quarterback, I think he's the real deal. But again, yeah, you gotta build around him, and most importantly, you gotta. It's like what we were talking about earlier in regards to the Chargers. You gotta change the mindset so that when one thing goes wrong, things don't snowball on you. And that's what they have to work on. And again, they play Tennessee next week. That's the rival. If you can't get up for Tennessee and you're at Vanderbilt, there's just really no sense going. If you can't get up for your hated rival, there's no sense. And then, of course, the end of the year with Georgia. And if I'm Georgia, I'm just kind of smoldering right now, because that's the week of the SEC championship game. And knowing Georgia, they think that Eastern Conference title for to play is their birthright. So they're going to be mad that they have to play somebody other than Alabama on that day. So they're either going to come up and it's going to be 80-0, they'll check out earlier. It's either going to be a close game with a Vanderbilt win or a total Georgia rout. It's going to be one of the two. So that's kind of where I am with that. All right. Well, JJ, I want to thank you very much for agreeing to sit in with us. Again, Daniel will be back with us next week. He's enjoying himself in Las Vegas. Hopefully, he doesn't lose too much money. But again, it was really great having you here. Thanks again for helping us out.
Well, absolutely.
I appreciate it, JJ.
Absolutely. Thanks again, John and Leon, and guys, listeners of the last three guys. If you guys want to check us out at ATL Prime Sports on Twitter and Instagram, we post a new YouTube video weekly. Mm-hmm. I want to say thanks again, guys. I enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks a lot, JJ. Again, we are the last three guys to do a podcast. Again, this episode will drop Tuesday night, Sunday evenings live on Facebook Live, Tuesday nights on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes, and all the other Pocket Cast and all the other platforms out there. Thank you so much. We'll see you in 7 days. Appreciate it. This has been the last three guys to do a podcast.